Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for August 15th, 2008. This week, we've got some amazing animal stories for you. We'll tell you about a deadly sibling rivalry among seabirds, we'll introduce you to the world's smallest snake, and answer a listener's question about how animals can eat poisonous berries. But first, Suzanne's going to tell you about an extraordinary mammal that drinks for a living.
That's right. Some people drink for pleasure. Others turn to alcohol to forget their problems. But none of us really needs to drink just to survive. But it turns out a small Malaysian mammal called the pen-tailed tree shrew does. Pound for pound, the diminutive animal could drink most people under the table. Frank Wiens is a nutritional ecologist at the University of Bayreuth in Germany. He recently discovered that this odd species spends more than 2 hours every night licking the fermented nectar of the Bertram palm.
And the nectar contains up to 3.8% alcohol. That's in the range of a beer.
Now, you'd think these guys would end up pretty drunk by the end of the night, but Veen says that's not the case.
When we observed the behavior, there was no indication of drunkenness. They just moved normally. They didn't drop out of the trees. There was no other odd behavior. So although they have very moderate to high intake of alcohol, they probably have only low or medium blood alcohol concentration.
As to why, he says the animals probably have a more efficient way of metabolizing alcohol than humans. And he adds that in exchange for their nightly drink, the tree shrews provide an important service to the palm. Every time they visit the plant, they help pollinate it.
Thanks, Suzanne. You know, we really need to do a follow-up story to see if the researcher has ever tried drinking the palm nectar himself.
Right. Further research is probably needed to figure that out.
Yes, definitely. Okay. Now, the tree shrew is not the only small mammal that's been making a splash lately. That's because evolutionary biologist Blair Hedges has a knack for finding tiny animals. He helped discover both the world's smallest frog and the world's smallest lizard. And now he can add the world's smallest snake to that list. The Penn State professor stumbled upon the tiny reptile called Leptotiflops carli on the island of Barbados. He says it's less than 4 inches long and just an eighth of an inch in diameter.
It's the thickness of a typical spaghetti noodle. It's a very small snake.
He says the non-venomous snake beat out the previous record holder, the Martinique thread snake. He thinks the snake's tiny size may have evolved to fill an ecological niche left open by insects that never reached the island during its evolutionary history.
I think the real story here is not so much this is the smallest snake, but the fact that it's the smallest and on an island, which is unusual because islands make up only 3% of the land area of the Earth. And so why would so many of the smallest species be on islands? This little snake may be filling a niche left by an invertebrate, like a centipede or something, that just never made it out to the Barbados. And there's maybe a certain small prey that these small centipedes normally eat on the mainland in South America, and it left open this niche for the snake to evolve a smaller size and fit into that niche and prey on it. I mean, that's just speculation there, but that's an example of probably the reason in general why the smallest and the largest of these vertebrates occur on islands.
Hedges says that because the tiny snake's internal organs are large in proportion to its body size, he believes this may be about as small as a snake can possibly get.
And speaking of island reptiles, there was a report in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences this week about a type of chameleon in Madagascar that gives new meaning to the expression live fast, die young. The lizards hatch, grow to full maturity in 2 months, mate and lay eggs over another 2 months, and then the entire population drops dead. The eggs lie dormant for 8 or 9 months before the cycle repeats.
That is incredible. So most of the time, this entire species exists only as eggs. Crazy. Okay, next, our guest reporter Karina Wu answers a listener's question.
Wild berries look delicious for a reason. They're meant to tempt birds and animals to eat the berries and help spread their seeds. But that prompted listener Kevin Lamangeli of Brick, New Jersey, to ask us why some berries are poisonous, since it would seem to counteract that purpose. Well, we consulted Andrew Sanders, curator of the University of California Riverside's Herbarium. He says just because a berry is toxic to us doesn't mean it's toxic to every animal.
Berries, in general, are animal dispersed fruits, and so it has to be, I think, almost logically, that anytime you find a berry, there is some animal that can eat it.
The bane berry, for instance, makes people very sick, but does no harm to birds, squirrels, or chipmunks. Also, Sanders says a lot of berries are toxic only when they're immature. That prevents the seeds from being eaten before they're fully developed. The toxins break down as the berry ripens.
When it's fully ripe, when it changes color, becomes bright red or yellow or whatever color it is, that's sort of a signal to potentially dispersing animals that this fruit is no longer green and inedible. It is now available.
Sanders says producing fruit costs the plant a lot of energy. Otherwise, it could get away with making a hard seed capsule. So the fact that a plant makes a berry at all means that somebody has adapted to eating it.
Thanks, Karina. And if you have a science question, call us at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, you'll win a Science Update mug. Next, Suzanne's going to tell you about a very deadly sibling rivalry.
A seabird called the Nazca booby nests on islands in the eastern Pacific. Pairs often produce two eggs, but only one chick ever makes it out of the nest alive. That's because the older chick usually fights the younger one to the death. Biologists Martina Moeller and David Anderson and their colleagues at Wake Forest University recently identified what's behind this murderous behavior, the hormone testosterone.
We suspected that we would see an unusual hormone profile in the case of a fight to the death. And indeed, at the time that they hatch, the species has elevated androgens, which are male aggression-related hormones, compared to their relatives that don't have these lethal fights. When they do have a fight, they elevate their testosterone even higher.
And when these aggressive chicks grow up, they seek out new hatchlings to bully.
What we found was that much later in life, as an adult, that they have an unusual attraction to chicks that are not their own, that they want to have social interactions with, sometimes abusive interactions, when they become adults.
Anderson says high testosterone levels early on could also have permanent behavioral effects in other animals, including humans.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, we'll head to the ocean to explore some amazing connections between fish and humans, and we'll meet a very cool-looking fish that's wreaking havoc in its adopted habitat. Until then, check out our Science Update Podcast Daily Edition. We've got a thrilling new science story every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.